This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Ithaca, New York boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation among 150 waterfalls. Plan your trip today with help from visitithaca.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today, and thank you.
Hi, I'm Allie Kane. Welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building and growing consumer brands. When we launched a line of fresh sauces, I knew we were jumping into something crazy. Haven's Kitchen is a cooking school, cafe, and event space. A product that people buy in grocery stores is an entirely new business, and I had a lot to learn. So in my efforts to get myself educated, I started meeting everyone I know and respect who could advise me on production and distribution, sales and legal, PR, and social media. Then I started having those conversations here as a podcast so that other entrepreneurs can learn from them as well. This is the story of Haven's Kitchen Sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Jean Brownhill, founder and CEO of Sweeten, a free award-winning service that pairs homeowners and business owners to contractors for major renovation projects. To date, Sweeten has more than $1 billion of construction in the pipeline, and New York Magazine has called Jean the contractor whisperer, which I love. Sweeten was one of Inc. Magazine's hottest new companies. Jean is co-founder and chairwoman of the African American Student Union at Harvard's Graduate School of Design, where she was one of 9 recipients of the prestigious Loeb Fellowship. She's also a member of the 2018 class of Henry Crown Fellows within the Aspen Global Leadership Network at the Aspen Institute. You are a highly accomplished lady, and you're also a really nice person, and so I'm really happy that you're here today.
Thank you so much for having me. Halfway through that intro, I was like, who is she talking about?
I know. Isn't that great? That's you, babe. That wow. is you.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're going to have a lot of advice. You've given me some really good advice in our couple of conversations that we've had before today, which is why I wanted you to come on. But before we do all that, what I usually do is sort of get the skinny on you as a kid. What did you want to be? The architects that I've known in my life, I always describe as sort of this very strange, good strange. But
you could probably stop there. But, very strange, period.
Well, I feel like most people are either heavily left or heavily right-brained. And I feel like architects are kind of balanced right-brain, left-brain. And that makes for an unusual person. Have you always been interested in architecture? Were you an architect-y kid? Were you an engineer kid? Yeah. Were you a design kid? Were you right brain, left brain?
Definitely right brain, left brain, mm-hmm. for sure. So I have dyslexia. And uh-huh. so I was always really good at math class and art class. And in fact, I didn't know what an architect did.
Right.
Until my guidance counselor said you should consider going to architecture school.
That's so cool.
Like no one in my community was using an architect. And I was right. just like, okay. And he's like,
where
yeah.
did you grow up?
New London, Connecticut.
Okay.
Not that far from, sometimes people know Mystic
no,
Pizza.
I know. Yeah. And there's a ferry.
Yeah, exactly. People have often like driven
I've passed through
it.
Through
yeah,
New exactly. London. Yes, exactly. Gotten on the ferry.
Exactly.
Yes.
So
that's cool. So you had a guidance counselor who was like, actually, this would be a great career for you.
Yeah.
That's
so
amazing.
So, and you know, I don't really remember having that many conversations with him.
Right.
In fact, and so it's funny that it had like so much actual guidance over my life that he gave me this recommendation.
Yeah.
But I went home and I told my mom, and she looked at one of those College for Dummies books, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day,
yep.
this big yellow and black book. And she looked up architecture schools and she found Cooper Union here in New York City. And it said free tuition scholarship. And she's like, oh my God.
Great.
Your guidance counselor is a genius.
Wow.
You're definitely going to go to this free architecture school. Yeah. This is perfect.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like harder to get into than West Point.
Yeah. And no, seriously, it actually, I mean, but it worked.
It worked. I mean, my mother does have that kind of very fortunate luck. She kind of manifests things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah. So when you were littler, like when you were 9 or 10, were you, I have two dyslexic kids and two kids with ADHD out of 5.
Wow.
And then one who's like, I got something, you know, and I'm like, well, nothing that's showing up. She's like, trust me, I have everything. I think sometimes if a child has any sort of learning issue and isn't encouraged very early on, they start to kind of turn on themselves a little mm-hmm. bit and mm-hmm. think that there's something wrong. Were you supported as a kid like that? Were you more introverted because of it, or did you act out because of it? Like, how did it affect your life?
I mean, so it wasn't diagnosed until, like formally diagnosed until after college.
So you were really good at compensating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I am like a master.
Overachiever. Yeah.
Overachiever.
My oldest daughter's like that.
And I would often feel like, you know, like almost, like I would look at everybody else and I'd just be like, why does it feel like I have like 50 pound weights tied to my shoulders?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like it's so much easier for you guys, but I just like kept chugging along.
Yeah.
I definitely have memories of being in school and being asked to read out loud, which is a very,
it's awful,
really, really challenging thing for a dyslexic brain to do.
Yeah.
And I have these memories of what felt like my mind, the gears of my mind just locking and looking at the page and being so anxious, and the teacher just being like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. You can say fuck.
Oh, thanks. What the fuck? I went to Catholic school, but my mother is like a devout atheist. She sent me to Catholic school because she does believe in education.
Right, yes.
So my teachers would not have cursed, but they were... it was like the word like glucose, I think I was supposed to be saying. I don't remember. Yeah. I just like have like this such a clear memory of just standing there and being like frozen.
Yes, that's the worst.
And
they
still do
that. My son is 13 and his second grade teacher was like, let's go around in a circle. I'm like, you know he's dyslexic. Yeah. Why are you doing that to him?
Yeah.
Like, and then, you know, it just became a thing. So
it's
I moved
horrible.
Him. But
yeah, it's hard. I mean, now I think they have like really good schools and it seems like you're a super proactive mom about it. But at the time I was just like,
keep just
quiet. Don't tell anybody.
And like, if you're really bright, which you clearly are, you learn very early on how to compensate. Yeah. So you work 3 times as hard. You just make friends with the teachers. You know, you're a good kid.
Exactly.
And some kids that works for and other kids, unfortunately, it doesn't. But it sounds like, did you have siblings?
I have 3 half-brothers, but they only lived with me when I was very young. So it was me and my mom for most of my childhood journey. And, you know, my mom is like a voracious reader.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just don't think that it really computed to her at all.
Yeah.
Like it just couldn't even.
Did you think you wanted to be a scientist or a mathematician like when you were little, or did you?
So I got obsessed with Jane Goodall when I was little, like obsessed.
Yeah.
And I used to have this like Velcro monkey that I would strap to myself.
That's so cute.
And I actually took sign language courses at our local college. And this
I was very like, good, right? Like different language.
Exactly.
That is not right. Yep.
So visual.
Yeah,
like
so much sense.
And I was super into it. Yeah. And I remember like having my like little Velcro monkey and practicing sign language and having yeah. this dream of like being Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
That's really what I thought I was going to do.
It's funny because for- if you had asked me to guess what you would have wanted to be, I would have said a vet.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of came to me, but.
Yeah. Well, I love I have a Yorkie. I mm-hmm. used to have a French Mastiff and a Yorkie.
Have those you taught him sign language or no?
My God, I would love to teach my dog sign language. That'd be the best. So then she could tell me when she's eaten something terrible off the street.
Right. She can just give you a paw hand thing. Okay. So you end up at Cooper Union because you worked your butt off and you got through that. And then did you go straight? I know you went to coach, but I don't know what the exact
yep. So I graduated from Cooper Union mm-hmm. and I ended up working for Elizabeth O'Donnell, who became the associate dean of Cooper Union. She was a structures teacher at the time. And again, I was really good at math. I was good at structures.
Yeah.
And I started working for her in third year of college. Mm-hmm. And so it was amazing because I basically graduated on a Monday and just went straight back to work on a Tuesday.
That's so cool.
And ended up working for her for 5 years.
Amazing.
And really got to cut my teeth in residential New York City interior architecture.
Right.
And it was fantastic.
Awesome.
From there, I went on to coach the handbag company. Oh, well, I had a brief stint doing houses, very large houses in the Hamptons.
Right.
I wanted to learn wood frame construction.
Uh-huh.
So I was doing all these interiors in New York City, really wanted to learn a different building methodology.
Right.
Huge houses in the Hamptons is the best way to learn how to do wood frame construction because
wow.
it's done by the best builders and perfectly.
Right.
Those houses
no
are like.
No expenses yeah, spared.
They're like
yes.
10,000 square foot pieces of furniture, essentially.
Right. Amazing. That's no, it's so cool.
Yeah. It was really, it was a great learning education.
Yeah.
And, but I remember, you know, in each one of those places, it just didn't quite feel like it was the right, now I would say customer that I would want to serve.
Yep.
At the time, I probably said client, but yep. it just, you know, like it was hard for me to really sympathize or empathize
yeah.
with folks who were like, okay, you know,
right.
I have to get into this summer house.
Yes.
Our other four houses right. are going to be under renovation right. at this time.
My
this
husband's
is the only one.
Tie drawer isn't pulling yeah. out correctly. There are people who are really interested in seeing you from, we're at Robert. There's, you have some fans,
I don't know who
lady.
These people are, but.
I don't either, but they're like very, Matt, I know Maddie and I are both very impressed with your magnetism.
Yeah. Amazing.
So anyway, going back to
so
that, yeah,
I
would imagine like coming from, you know, it doesn't sound like a fancy pants
no,
upbringing.
No,
then
super.
Sort of like going into the high end Hampton market with,
yeah.
you know,
going from just making it from
yeah.
like push starting my mother's car because we couldn't afford a new starter, like
yes.
all through the winters to then
Hampton's houses.
Hampton's
yeah.
Hampton, like, and, yeah. and, you know, I don't know if you know, like Nan's the hardware company, but I remember putting
yeah,
in,
I remember Nan's.
Like a $300,000 hardware order for this kitchen that we were doing. And I'm like, I am ordering $300,000 worth
yeah.
of like poles and hinges.
Right.
It's like, I gotta,
yeah,
this has been really awesome. I've learned a ton, but I gotta go.
So you went to a high end bag company.
So what I want wanted is to actually get out of an architecture office.
Okay.
That was my only goal. At that point, I wanted to figure out how I could not be surrounded by people that kind of all had the same educational background,
yep.
had all the same references.
Yep.
So really, it could have been any place that would have hired me as an architect. So that was the only professional experience I had.
Right.
But that I could be surrounded right. by.
You were like an in-house. Yeah.
Like
oh, that's interesting.
Like everything else. I just wanted to like learn about the world around me.
Yeah. Very cool.
So I got hired at Coach and I was psyched.
Great. And what did you do there?
So I was a senior manager of global architecture.
Okay.
And, you know, I got hired to do traditional architecture work. So drafting, you know, every single store, every single
right.
fixture, all the furniture, that all has to be drawn and architected by someone. And,
right.
and most brands have an in-house architecture.
Interesting.
Group.
So basically you were, every time they would open a new store, they needed plans. You were the one who made the plans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they had 200 stores. So
yeah. So they actually had 1,800 locations,
okay.
including international,
got
retail,
it.
Wholesale, you know, huge, huge
yeah.
fleet of stores. So I ended up, so I got hired as a traditional architect, but you know, as you've pointed out, I'm always pretty ambitious slash curious.
And yes.
I raised my hand and I said, you know, I think that the architecture group would do really well if we built a website that helped us to manage our inventory of stores, because when the store opens for the architecture, for when this, the project is done for the architecture group, it means it's just opening for the rest of the company. And we're doing a terrible job handing over that information to everybody else.
That's so smart.
So I pitched the COO of the company. Yeah. He's like, yeah, whatever, build this website. Like, just don't, you know,
Keep doing your regular job.
Keep doing your regular job. Don't spend too much. So ended up building that and also a platform that allowed us to bid out our projects. So you could get like apples to apples bid comparisons.
So cool. And this is all great because I know how this story ends. And I love it. I love the fact that it all ladders up to this thing that you're doing now, which we're going to get into in a second.
So it was definitely... I was an intrapreneur, I believe they call it.
Yeah, so cool.
The CEO of the company was like, this platform that you built cost us, you know, I don't know what it was. I'm guessing it was like $100,000. Mm-hmm. You saved us $300,000 the first week it was launched. Like, keep doing this. I don't remember if those were the exact numbers. But so I went on to just build websites that made the architecture group and construction group more efficient. And that's what I did for the remainder of my time there.
That's so cool. And then... Now, I know it was 2007 that you were renovating a house.
Yep. that corporate salary. I could buy a real house.
So you got the the Nan's hardware. No, I'm sure your first thing was, I'm going to get $305,000.
I went to the sample sale and bought a screw, and it was like...
a gorgeous screw.
It was handmade.
I'm sure it was perfect. So, and that's when, I mean, because you didn't plan, you weren't planning on leaving, but you embarked upon this renovation project of your own. I mean, to me, it's so brilliant, right? You're like, there are these two groups of people. There are the people that need to renovate, and then there's the construction slash, you know, contractor kind of group. And I like the way you put it in one of the interviews I read, where like they fundamentally mistrust each other. They don't speak the same language. They don't, you know, this group thinks that group is cheating them. This group thinks that group is cheating them.
Totally.
You know, it's like, there's just this kind of weird, and they need someone to speak the language and to interpret. It's like the two completely different planets that these people live on.
That's totally right.
And did you find, as an architect, you were in this problem yourself?
Yeah, so I bought a house in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. It was a wood frame house from like the 1890s. It hadn't been renovated, and you know, since like the early 50s, they put in a new kitchen.
Right.
And I was really excited about it. Like, you know, it was the most expensive thing I've ever bought.
Yeah, and then you bought your own little piece of the rock.
Yeah, and then I took all the money that I'd ever saved that was left and handed it to someone with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're working as an architect, it's a very different experience to be drawing floor plans or budgeting projects. Mm-hmm. But when it's your dollars being spent, you know, you internalize every single line on that paper really differently.
Yep.
So that was the first experience of just being like, wow, this is really different. And then when I went to hire a general contractor, I ended up hiring the wrong one. He wasn't a bad guy. He was just not well suited for my project.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very classic... you know, scenario where, you know, communication completely broke down.
Yep.
We then got into this like standstill where he was totally dug in.
To active.
Yeah. Yeah. I was dug in. Yep. I became the GC. It was just a mess. It was a mess. And it really was one of those moments. I think a lot of entrepreneurs have them where, you know, you have your own problem and you also have an idea for the solution.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. I've read that, and sorry, gentlemen, but I've read that most female entrepreneurs start with a problem that they've encountered on their own, and most males kind of go out and seek out a white space.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
that might be completely gendered and a little bit like over reductive, but.
Well, I can just give you an example in my industry. So, you know, again, so I've been on a mission since 2008, 2009 to figure out how I could use the distributive power of the internet to get high quality construction and design resources to regular people.
Mm-hmm.
that's kind of always been the thing. So I, in that time, so that's, you know, 10 plus years now,
right.
Not to age myself, but I have seen a lot of people come into the space.
Yep.
You know, it's, they see a huge market, $350 billion
yep.
per year on just residential renovations. So that's not new construction. That's not commercial.
Just renovations.
And that it's people doing bathrooms and kitchens mostly.
Yep.
So they see this huge market.
Yep.
And then, yes, it is wildly fragmented. So 62% of all licensed general contractors book less than $500,000 a year. So it's mostly these tiny general contractors running around servicing this massive market.
Yeah.
I have seen more men
raise
literally hundreds of millions of dollars and just slam
into the market. Right.
Into the market.
Yeah.
And then kind of ooze down the side of it.
Like Sweetin does. Yeah. Right. Like splat down.
Yeah, that's we've just been, we've never been in a position, you know, I've been fortunate. I've raised a lot of venture capital.
Yes, which I really want to talk about.
But it has been in increments that have basically allowed us to really understand the problem, have a really good sense of what the solution would be. Like we've hacked it together using third-party technologies.
Yep.
And then we've built proprietary software and used like those venture dollars to build it. We have never been able to have the luxury to build.
Just like a big war chest.
Yeah, just to be able to like build a bunch of stuff and like see what sticks.
It's funny. I believe in that. I want to get back to that because I really do believe in that. And I have like a very sort of Luddite Haven's Kitchen example of it. But I do want to get to, because I want to get into like the nitty gritty for other founders, but I also want to get to this fellowship that you were one of like two people in the universe to ever get. I mean, so you're working at Coach, you do the thing, you have this idea. Yeah. Where did you go with that idea? Did you go to get this fellowship specifically to like, how did the next step work?
Yeah. So I started becoming really passionate about, you know, it sounds so stupid, but like the internet.
like the powers of the internet.
The power of the internet, right? And I started giving these presentations where I was kind of running around and saying like, listen, people who care about architecture, architects, you know, urban planners, like people who care about the built environment should be building the technology on top of this platform because we can see what happens when people who don't care about it build the technology.
Yeah.
So look what happened to journalism. Look what happened to the music industry.
Oh.
Like any hierarchical creative space gets torn apart
if
by this
thing.
If they
don't own their own.
We need to be the ones building on top of it. We need to be the ones like coming up with these ideas. And so it kind of was like Chicken Little a little bit, like the internet is coming, but it was like 2008. Yeah. So like the internet was here, but I still hadn't really affected architecture or construction that much yet, or even the art world for that matter that much. The formal art world, like the gallery world. So it was at one of those talks that I was giving that a woman actually came up to me after the presentation and said, you know, I really think that you would be a great candidate for the Loeb Fellowship at the Graduate School of Design. Have you ever heard of it? And I was like, nope.
Right.
And then she's like, it's Harvard. And I was like, yep.
Yep.
and it's, you know, it's an incredible, incredible fellowship. And you get to spend a year with, you know, people who think really deeply about the built environment and on the campus of Harvard. You can take any class at Harvard or MIT. And, you know, it's, they take really, really good care of you and
Amazing.
Just ask you to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And I had already wanted to do that. So I was psyched to be there.
So you did that for a year and then you came back and started Sweetin?
So what had happened? So I had started two attempts at Sweetin or, you know, again, trying to solve this problem of like, how do you bring high quality construction design resources to regular people?
Yep.
I had had two other businesses before that didn't work.
Got it.
Out of the ashes, so I still had a couple of customers and a couple of general contractors, a couple of homeowners.
Right.
I said, please let me buy you coffee. And I promise I won't talk. You tell me what the problem is.
Yep.
Because so often you, in my case, like I knew the customer I wanted to serve.
Yeah, of course.
I thought I knew the problem. And then I like shoved a bunch of answers down their throat. And they were like, that's not helping. We don't want to use that service. We don't know. So I took them to coffee, and basically the value prop from Sweetin came out of those meetings.
Yeah.
So homeowner said, I am terrified. I need you to stay with me until the complete project is over.
Don't just hook me up.
Oh, here's an email or here's like a profile of a general contractor. Yep. I need you to stay with the project till the end.
Wow.
It's like, great. General contractor, same thing. Like, I will give you lots of money, but it has to be on work. I cannot. I am bad at sales. I'm bad at marketing. Yeah. I'm also kind of bad at like cash flow management.
Yeah.
So I can do it if it's like real work.
Yeah.
But I can't do it speculatively.
Right, right, right.
Because they had been so burned by lead generation sites, like just like hitting their credit cards over and over, and then like getting into debt for things that didn't materialize for their business. So
how did you know that this one was going to stick?
So I didn't. Mm-hmm. So I ended up putting basically like a landing page up with the value prop. So post your project, I will match it to one of the vetted general contractors in my network, and I will track that project all the way to completion to make sure you're happy.
Yep.
And immediately we had more projects than I had general contractors to match, but I did it a month before I was going to Harvard because I was like, oh, well, I have Harvard at my back. So even if this thing doesn't explode, it explodes in a bad way, again, like my mom and her friends will use it and no one else.
right. Yeah.
But, you know, I think when you have nothing to lose, oftentimes you do get these breakthroughs and it was definitely one of them. So the site really started taking off, but it was me taking a full course load and then running it on nights and weekends.
Wow.
So there was no technology behind it to support it. It was me sending
just literally
a ton of emails, and I had this massive spreadsheet.
Right.
And, you know, again, so the way that it works is we track. Not only do we introduce you to three general contractors from our list of vetted general contractors, we then see when you have a site visit, when they submit estimates, sign contracts, start date, mid-project check-in, and then completed project check-in. So all of those general contractors are kind of oscillating at different cadences for different projects.
For sure.
And so it's like this massive logistics distribution project. Yeah.
I picture you juggling, but instead of juggling balls, you're juggling like apartments and kitchens and,
Excel,
you know, a
mostly.
Lot. We're going to take a little break.
Great.
And then when we come back, we're going to give all sorts of advice. You've already given a couple of whammies, so I'm looking forward.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Located in New York's Finger Lakes region, Ithaca boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation. As the saying goes, Ithaca is gorgeous. The city is home to 150 waterfalls and gorges sprinkled through its downtown and sloping hillsides. State parks and acres of natural lands offer outdoor recreation for every level of enthusiast. Come stroll among the cool ravines, scenic hiking trails, and natural vistas. Ithaca is home to Ivy League Cornell University and Ithaca College, resulting in an influx of new cultures, new tastes, and new energy every year. There's so much to explore, from art galleries and museums to unique attractions like the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Ithaca sits at the heart of a blossoming heritage and craft cider industry. Some of these delicious ciders can be bought in market, but many of the most unique varieties can only be experienced with a visit to Ithaca and this great cider region. Go to visitithaca.com to get inspired and plan your trip today.
Hi, I am back with Jean Brownhill, founder and CEO of Sweeten. So you get back from Harvard and you're cranking along and things are starting to pick up. And I guess, you know, the first few years of business, do you remember some pain points that you have? Can you kind of look back and say, had I known this, this would have been more helpful, or any, you know, what you kind of wish you knew then that you can sort of tell to, cause I think I'm still not 100% sure, but the majority of people that write me that are listening to this, are founders and they are, you know, I mean, I kind of call this as like, instead of how I built this, like how the hell am I going to build this? which should have been the name for the podcast, but I don't know, In the Sauce was kind of witty. Is there stuff you wish you knew then, or you know, looking back, anything you wish you would have done a little differently?
You know, I wish, and this sounds probably...
No, just say it.
Well, I don't know if it's helpful or not, but I just wish I would have worried less.
Yeah, that is helpful.
You know,
I think that's very helpful.
I was like in the fetal position for like many, many days, years, months. I don't know. I like lost track. And even if it doesn't work, like it's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's still okay. You're still okay.
Yeah.
I like two things that you said earlier that I kind of made notes and then I tried to read them and I couldn't. But one is, you know, we never had PR for Havens. And when we finally did start to get like a little press attention, I was really relieved that it was 2 years in, because had it been earlier, we wouldn't have been ready for it. You know, I think there is something about building it. I mean, I know that it's hard because we all need money to do stuff. And so I consider myself incredibly lucky that I was able to bootstrap, and to invest my own money and all of that. And, you know, I talk pretty openly about, I don't know what I would have done if I needed to go raise money to build Havens, because I can't imagine anyone would invest in it, honestly. But I mean, in the brick and mortar, the sauce is definitely different. But I think if you can, you know, instead of just creating this kind of war chest of money to spend, the idea of really figuring out what you are, you know, what you're good at, that takes time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I love that you said that. And the second thing that you kind of said was, you know, we as founders, of course we think we've got the answer. That's what makes us like arrogant enough to do this in the first place, right? I'm going to solve this problem for the world. Arrogant/visionary, whatever you want to call it, depending on the day, right? Yep. But at the end of the day, people that are buying your product or that want your product or that are going to sit down and tell you what they need, those are the people you need to listen to. And they are not always going to give you, you know, people tell us all the time what the kind of sauces they want. And they might not be things we can make for this type of production, you know, but I think asking your customer is scary in a way because they might tell you something that you don't want to hear. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of the best possible thing you can do for your business.
I mean, I think that one of, and again, it's hard to like remember exactly in retrospect, so I don't want people to think that I had this like clarity back then. But, you know, I think one of the things that I kind of always had in some type of focus is not as crystal clear as it is now, but I just had a customer that I wanted to be of service.
Yeah.
Right.
So you geared everything toward that customer.
Yeah. So it just made it easier to try to just figure out like what I could do to be helpful.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't that I had like spent my life building this technology. It wasn't that I had like, I don't know, a bunch of R&D or something around. Right. I fell in love with architecture when I went to architecture school. Like space is super important to me and I see what it can do for other people when they have a space that really makes them happy.
Yep.
And so I just wanted to bring that feeling to as many people as possible. And, you know, now of course, like I'm totally infatuated with our general contractors as well, because they're like, you know, mostly first and second generation immigrants that were helping build their businesses. And they are so kind and generous and nice people and hardworking. And our office is filled with snacks from their home countries.
Right.
Like whenever trying to.
And it's neat because you're serving you're serving both groups, like by helping them communicate with each other. They're both your customers.
Yeah.
Right.
The general contractors are our customers, and we consider the homeowners and small business owners our shared clients.
Got it.
And you know, this kind of goes into, it just goes into one of the things that I think that I got right early on. Uh-huh. And that was that I knew that I wanted, you know, like people like me to have like really nice homes that, you know, they had saved up their money and they could finally like have a space to make themselves happy and space for everyone. And what I realized is that the general contractors weren't the problem.
Right.
That they were integral to the solution, that they were the solution.
Yeah.
And so I made them my customer and really built tools to support them, built a process to support them and make them successful, because that was the best, easiest, fastest way to make sure that spaces were being built. So
smart. Oh, gosh. Okay. Going into the next thing that is kind of amazing. And I just want to make sure that I have my facts correct.
Okay.
Because when I sent you the draft, I was like, is this real crazy OMFG question mark? Okay. So in 2015, so what year did you start? You started 2011?
Start 2011. Yeah.
Okay. You're bootstrapping. It's growing.
Yep.
2015, you decide to go raise money.
I actually raised in 2013.
Okay. So 2013, you go to raise money.
Yep.
By 2015, this is the data I have.
Yep.
You were one of only 11 African-American female entrepreneurs at all to raise more than $1 million.
Yes.
In venture capital.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yes.
I feel like I should repeat that, but I won't for lack of, you know, to rewind. So that's daunting. I mean, what?
You know what, though? I have to say, I don't think about those numbers. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Like when
did I did you at the time?
I knew it was hard, but again, so
you're a woman, you're African American, you're raising money for
dyslexic
construction.
You're dyslexic. I was like, so you're used like, to, I'm used like to having adversity. 50 pound weights.
Yep.
I'm super used to everything being really hard. Aww. I remember in one of my very first pitches, one of the, you know, early, very early seed, sometimes the investors will ask you like, well, why you?
Right. I love that.
You're always like, war. Okay.
Well, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I was like, listen, you know, clearly, like I've told you about my background, you can see that I'm African American, you can see that I'm a woman, you know that I grew up like, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. without a lot of money. And I am used to the front door being locked.
Yeah.
And so if I try the front door and it's locked, I will try the windows, I will try the fire escape, yep. I will try the chimney,
crawling under,
I will try, right. I will dig under, I will burrow over, I will get in, I will figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's why you want me.
I actually, like, I'm a little teary-eyed. I have to say, I knew when I met you that, like, you were the bee's knees.
But thank you.
You really are. So, and now, just to be clear, now there are 26. Is that?
So the last time they did the study, there were 26. I believe that there's like 35 now.
Okay.
So we have
African-American women to raise more than $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've raised significantly more than that at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I keep reminding myself and the group that venture capital is in fact not that old of a profession.
Yeah.
Right. Plenty of big businesses were built before venture capital existed.
Yep.
There are many ways to skin the cat.
Yep.
Like we should not believe the press hype that this is the metric in which all of our business acumen should be judged.
I call it entrepreneurship worship.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is, I don't think that that's out there. I feel like I might have coined it.
Nice.
But I think that, you know, it's funny because someone the other day was talking about a company and they said, well, they're killing it. And I was like, you know, we don't actually know that they're killing it. We know that they've raised a lot of money. Those are not the same thing.
That's right.
Right? Different.
My
but you did raise a lot of money.
I have.
And you
now.
Are killing it.
I have. And we are.
So now you're both.
Yeah. Well, we have just been, and really the team at a certain point, it really just becomes the team doing the hard work.
Yeah.
And just every day, like we have stuck to our knitting. We have really just figured out how to get homeowners and general contractors to transact renovations successfully, that each one of them are happy with the process and that the results and the process are enjoyable.
Yep.
So, you know, that took a really long time to get to a place where, you know, our average order value or our average renovation is $100,000.
It's also hard because I would guess that you don't have a ton of repeat, you know, I mean, I would guess people do their kitchen, they might do a bathroom, but they're not, it's not like you have a lifetime customer.
Yeah. So our customers are the general contractors and they are doing repeat business. So they're doing many renovations with us.
Right.
Now you're absolutely right. Most people don't do major renovations often in their lifetime, but that is also why our value proposition works is because people really want a neutral third party to support them all the way through it because they're scared as hell.
Yeah. So questions about that, because you said something about team. I want to hear hiring advice because I think that as we sort of start to trust other people with the baby, we think that we should choose people that work for us the way that we choose friends.
Terrible idea.
Not a good idea. I mean, I think people come at it from different angles. Yeah. That I, you know, that happened to be sort of like my early on error.
I mean, anyone who's been in business any amount of time, if they tell you that they haven't made hiring mistakes, they're lying.
Yeah.
Because every single entrepreneur that I know has gone through the painful process of realizing, at least for me, a couple of things. One, I was optimizing for our technical skills and not like personality and just like overall
you were
integrity.
Looking, right.
Yeah, I was just looking for technical
not
skills.
Not culture fit necessarily.
Yeah. And then the other thing, it was really hard for me to internalize that it was okay to shape the company around myself.
Yeah.
It really, I don't know. I don't know if this is like, maybe it's a woman
thing.
It's a woman thing. Maybe it's a whatever, but it, I mean, now I'm fine with it. And I really understand why that's so important to let that happen because it, the company needs it, right?
Yep.
It needs to.
There needs to be a guiding core.
Exactly.
And most of the time that guiding core is the founder.
Exactly.
And when it's not, that's actually a problem.
And when I was contorting myself to try to fit these people that had the technical skills that I thought that I needed.
Yeah. And then you're
and
not your authentic self.
And I was exhausted and they weren't happy and I wasn't happy. And just, it was so much more difficult. Now we have a team in place that, I mean, obviously they are technically like killers, literal killers. They all are smiles on their face.
Yeah.
Like, do not believe it for a second. They can get anything done.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
And they're all like really genuinely kind, fun people. Like we all work incredibly hard.
So great.
But if you come to our office, the vibe is not tense.
Right.
I mean, it's mostly filled with plants because I'm obsessed with plants.
Yeah. But also the vibe probably represents your vibe to some extent. You know, in my case, I think I didn't think I had sort of the like the chops, you know, so I hired people that I thought were really serious and get things done. And to some extent they were, but it made me always feel like I was like the annoying 8-year-old who was like, good morning. Do you want to hang out? Do you want to play? What do you want to do today? And they were sort of like, leave me alone to do my work.
Right. You know, the adults are doing work.
And yeah. And I felt like I had to always be like, I'm a big girl. You know, it was this really weird dynamic.
Yep.
And so then I wasn't my authentic self. They weren't their authentic selves, you know? And I think now, you know, I still hire again. I need people to follow through on my ideas. That is a clear theme for me.
Yeah.
But they don't do it in a way where they feel like I get the vibe that they're annoyed by me. I get the vibe that they know that that's what they're there for and they like my ideas and they're excited to be the people that put them into action.
Totally.
And it's a very different dynamic.
Totally. I mean, I think that it kind of goes hand in hand with the listening to customers.
Yep.
So the other thing, and just the advice around hiring.
Yeah, for sure.
That I've seen people make, and I definitely, it's the same type of hubris that made it so that I came with a solution.
Yeah.
I thought that a team meant like 10 or 20 or 30 of me.
Right.
Like if I could just replicate myself, that's a team.
Yeah.
And I remember so clearly realizing the incredible, and it, you know, it maybe sounds like kind of ridiculous because I'm such a, like a diversity and inclusion person and I'm all about like different perspectives.
Not necessarily of mine. Right.
Right. But then like when it's my own company, I was like really struggling to see how incredibly important it is to have a diversity of thought, to have different skill sets, to have different like
ENFJ,
priorities.
INTJs. Yeah. You need them all. Yeah.
You really do. Yeah. And it actually, one, I think it was like a Christmas party. I was like toasting to the team and this, like, thing just like blurted out of me, but I really mean it and meant it at the time and continue mm-hmm. to mean it. It wasn't until I started working with this team and saw their like dedication and passion to like get this thing like built and to also not take no for an answer and to keep working so hard that I really deeply felt what it feels like to say thank you.
Yeah.
Right? Like whatever I was saying before was like not thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's such a nice way to put it. Because you could sleep.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Like, thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy. It's not that you, like, paying people is a very low bar to get them to do anything.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. I mean, I looked at Marissa the other day and I just was like, I think I slept through the night, like, for the first time in several years. And I think it's primarily because I know that you're also carrying it, you know, like, they all are.
Totally.
And it is tremendous gratitude, I think. And that's such a nice way to put it. Okay. We could talk forever, but are you the ones reaching out to find the clients for the contractors, or when they have potential clients, do they loop onto your system?
Yeah. Or both? Right now, we find the clients. However, we have gotten so much requests from general contractors to bring their clients that didn't originate on Sweeten onto
the platform.
To manage
them,
Because, again, so we're offering, a lot.
Yeah.
So, like project management tools, customer service, education, like benchmark setting for pricing and timing.
No, that's great. So then going back to from a customer acquisition perspective, how do you think about that? How do you think about finding your target clients and reaching out to them and getting them to, there's no trial really. There's no taste it. And if you like it, you can buy it.
Well, so I think really the way that we, up until this point, have attracted most of our homeowners and small business owners to use Sweeten is that we have put all the effort into finding the great general contractors.
Right.
So we have a highly curated supply side. We only work with licensed general contractors. We get the full list of licensed general contractors from every city that we're in and go through every single one of them. Yep. We look at all of their online, anything we can find about them online. We look at their past permitting. Right. We look at their, Better
Business
Bureau.
So you're really selling a beautiful product.
Yeah. So we find, and that doesn't mean that they're the most expensive.
No.
We find the best working at all different price points, working in all different geographies and all different project styles.
Awesome.
And so then when we present that, we've done what is a ton of work for a homeowner, right? Because not only do we recruit them, but then we talk to three of their past clients. We dictate those conversations to start to build their profile.
Yep.
We get to know them. Like,
and how
really
do you get that
them.
Information out to potential, is it just like Instagram ads and Facebook? And I mean, I would imagine Pinterest is a big.
So we actually do, we do a lot of performance marketing, but in the beginning, and it might be helpful for certainly folks who are starting out, we do a lot of content marketing. Because we follow the projects from the very beginning to the very end, we get the before, during, after photos. Mm-hmm. We get the entire story. We get homeowners who are really excited to tell their stories. And so from day one, we have had a really active blog and an email newsletter. And now that content is, syndicated on Apartment Therapy, Dwell, Domino.
Right.
Like it's all over the place because actually getting renovation content, like before, during, and after content is really hard.
No, that's
and
very
And we just
cool.
have like an evergreen flow.
No, that's amazing. That's a great, I mean, that's super helpful. Right. And then you can use some of that for paid and,
Exactly. Right. But it's for us, again, because the trust factor is so huge. So homeowners don't trust general contractors.
Right.
And general contractors, in fact, don't trust that homeowners will hire them if they tell them the real price and real timeline.
Yep.
And so it becomes like a really vicious
cycle. Yeah, totally.
And so this content and the Sweeten platform, like it's really meant to counteract that. So when somebody sees like a smiling, happy family, they're like, okay.
And this is my happy contractor.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. Okay. So do you have a moment looking back over the last however many years where you, I'm sure, again, there were many, but like one moment that you can point to where you were like, ah, I have something good here. I am really happy, or I'm living the life that I'm in my flow, you know?
Like, yeah.
What brings that to you?
You know, we just opened LA. Mm-hmm. So June 1st, we soft launched, and last week was our official launch. And I definitely had that feeling. So I was in LA for the whole week, mm-hmm. and I did a bunch of press and parties and meetings, and it was just incredible to see the response.
Yeah.
Right. From a new market that had not really heard of us, to go from not hearing of us to, you know, we've got a lot of projects, a lot of GCs. We're already in construction on a few of them.
And so cool.
We're less than 30 days in.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And yeah, it was pretty wild.
Yeah.
And on top of that, to see the team had done most of it.
Yep.
You know, of course, I was consulted and asked and whatever. And I set the timeline for like when the market would open.
Right.
But to see them in their flow as well, it just is awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, we had a woman on the roof of one of our launch parties making, she was a street taco maker that they had found on like Eater that had been written up, and they like carried her cart up three flights of stairs, and she was making like handmade tacos at this launch party. Aww. It was like so awesome.
Yeah.
It was so great.
No, that's great. I'm so happy you were here. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Many great nuggets. I can't wait. Like, I'm excited to like write the Instagram story with all of my notes. And I just want to thank you so much for being here, Matt. Thank you for doing a fantastic engineering job on this. And I'll be back next week with another guest on In the Sauce. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.